providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I hope everybody enjoyed those first two segments where we focus more on metals, resources, stocks, especially in these last two segments of the first hour. We are focused on energy as we are chatting again with Dan Steffens, president of the Energy Prospectus Group. We're going to talk macro factors driving the oil price that was recently above $85, natural gas, which continues to be stuck in a pretty depressed price range, and a couple companies that Dan brought to our attention in his small cap growth portfolio. We're also going to highlight a luncheon that Dan is hosting in Houston with In Play Oil. Dan, let's start off with the oil price here. Oil earlier this week moved above $85 a barrel, up to about $87 a barrel as we're talking Wednesday, halfway through the day. It has pulled back a little bit. Have to ask kind of big picture question. What a lot of people were talking about heading into this week was the escalating conflict in the Middle East. How much war premium do you think, Dan, is currently in the oil price as it is now right around that $82 to $83 a barrel?
Well, it kind of always runs up on those kind of, and it wasn't a rumor, obviously, they did get attacked. So I ran, when I saw that happen, I thought, you know, it may be $100 oil or something on Monday. I think now we're sitting back thinking that because, you know, Israel was able to knock down 99% of the deals and had very little damage from that attack, maybe, you know, they're okay, and maybe they're not going to respond. I got to believe they are going to respond. I mean, think about if somebody lobbed 350 freaking rockets into the U.S. or something. I mean, you can't just not respond to it. So they could do something if they want to, but for them to attack, they would need support from U.S. military, because the U.S. military would have to take out or jam a lot of the air defense systems in Iran for Israel to do. Maybe it'd just be Israeli jets going in there, but we would have to help them get through the air defense of Iran. So maybe that's why I do think it got a little ahead of itself. A lot of times when you get this geopolitical risk premium in oil, if things don't happen pretty quickly, then it pulls back. So I think 87, 6 weeks ago, I was just hoping that oil would average, you know, 80 during the quarter. And then it, you know, went way above 85. So I raised the price I'm using in my forecast models is 82.50. But then I do think that oil is going to go quite a bit higher because demand for refined products, transportation fuels continue to drain storage. Our inventories of gasoline and diesel are both below where they should be for this time of year.
Yeah, Dan, I think some of those refined products, there is a choke point. But when you look at the oil price, a lot of market participants and possibly even some of the algo bots just look at the inventory builds. And we did get some updated numbers there. We had a guest on the show last week that was mentioning we may see a pullback in oil, not just because of the geopolitical cooling down a little bit, but just because of the builds. Could you maybe speak to that angle, the supply-demand part of it?
Yeah, I mean, we're kind of in a period of time of the, you know, crude oil is the feedstock for the refineries, and you got a period coming up this summer, driving season, where there's going to be higher demand for gasoline. There's always a lot of demand. There's a lot of demand for diesel for planting. You know, farmers use a lot of diesel equipment, and they need a lot of feedstock. So you got oil 1 or 2% below normal for this time of year. It doesn't seem like much, but OECD inventories are very low for this time of the year, and really, the oil market is global. So where the U.S. gas market is an island, U.S. and Canada, North America, let's say, is kind of an island and doesn't have enough export capacity yet, but we're going to get more. So it's more global stuff that does it. But, you know, these companies are all making a lot of money at over 80. They're very, very profitable at $80 oil.
So, Dan, broadly, we can say that the oil price is traded in a range here, really back to almost the third quarter of 2022, highs right around, let's say, 95 max and lows right into the about $65 range. We're at, I guess, slightly the higher end of this trading range. But again, this has been a sustainable, it seems like, trading range. What are the catalysts that could break the oil price out either to the upside up towards that $100 a barrel, or that could actually be a hamper and move the oil price down to potentially those mid-60 levels?
Well, I think when the reality sinks in that U.S. oil production is going to peak, and I'm seeing more and more that you guys have HFI research up there. They're saying they don't see U.S. oil production getting over 14 million barrels a day. So there's this belief that we just got to go out and, you know, run a bunch of rigs and drill a bunch of you know, more shale wells or something, and we can increase it. Well, every year you got all these other existing wells on steady decline. So the more and more that you rely on, especially the shales that have high decline rates, the more and more wells you have to drill every year just to hold production flat. And I would say today we're not really completing enough wells today that's going to be able to hold a production flat for much longer. So I think we are going to have a peak. You know, Adam Rosenzweig, which I think you've watched his stuff before, he's been touting for a long time that by the end of this year or early 2025, the Permian Basin is going to peak. If the Permian Basin peaks, there's no, you know, oil growth in the U.S. is pretty much done. Now, you know, maybe we'll come up with some, you know, new technologies or something. There's still a lot of oil in place, but there's no, the cheap oil is gone. I mean, there's no more $20 oil or $30 oil. And I would honestly say, you say that range, I used to tell people, if you want to run a low case on looking at a drilling program or something, run it at $50 oil. That'd be low. And, you know, it's maybe 70s, you're where you think it's going to be, and then maybe 80 or 90 for your high case. I think the base case now you'd have to say is 60. I can't see oil. You know, we'd have to have a major recession for oil to go back down to 60 and stay there. And then these companies, if we're at $80 oil, they are extremely profitable.
Yeah, Dan. And I think a lot of the companies were factoring in, maybe we'd still get stuck in that $60 to $70 range. So I think they're pretty happy with oil in the 80s. But to your point about the Permian Basin possibly peaking out, that may happen down the road. But right now, the U.S. is still outputting a ton of oil. Last year was one of the biggest output years of all time. And with that much oil drilling, there's also a lot of nat gas that comes as a result. So maybe could you give us an update on the nat gas markets as a result of all this oil production?
Well, in the Permian Basin now, gas prices are almost zero. The pipes are full. They have no more takeaway capacity. So they got a problem out there and they need more pipe. And, you know, we got a government that tries to block every freaking pipeline they want to build. So that hurts. So, yeah, you got that. You got all these wells being drilled for oil, but they produce a lot of rich gas, like high BTU gas. So it's good gas and you got a lot of liquids in it, you know, propanes, butanes and stuff in it. So that's really good, but we need more market. I think what we're going to see in gas, what's going to get gas prices going up, when they start bringing on and there's like five or six LNG export facilities that are set to come online over the next 2 years. In fact, a big one called in Plaquemines Parish, Louisiana, is coming online just in the next few months, and it adds another 2 BCF per day of capacity. The current problem is that several of these LNG export facilities, like Cheniere and, you know, some of the other big ones, they're doing some maintenance. They're down for maintenance, so feedstock demand for LNG export feedstock is down a little bit. So that's the current problem. We got a surplus really, and we've got to work it off, but you know, market forces they'll take care of it eventually.
Yeah. Well, natural gas, boy, oh boy, it just really seems stuck. Everyone's pointing to these LNG terminals that are being built, but doesn't seem like the market's looking ahead to those right now. Let's talk about the overall size of these markets. You brought up a very interesting stat to us before we recorded about the size of the natural gas market, but also tie it into the oil market. What sort of growth have we seen broadly in terms of production and demand in both oil and natural gas market size?
Well, you know, the EVs are not going to have the impact on lowering gasoline and diesel that they thought. So if that's still going up, our gasoline and diesel inventories are lower than normal in the United States. Demand remains very high. There's, you know, nothing that I see that's going to reduce demand. It would take like a global recession to dilute or reduce oil demand much. And I just don't see that happening. We're just not spending enough money. So you're not bringing on enough new supply to really keep up with rising demand. And I think IEA especially has been understating demand. Several people have sent letters to, I mean, we've had congressmen and stuff send letters to IEA in Paris telling them that, hey, you guys need to get your act together. You're underestimating this, because even EIA, our Department of Energy, has raised their demand forecast several times. So I don't see that. Now, on the natural gas side, I think everybody needs to realize this AI and crypto mining stuff is incredibly demanding for electricity. They are the only way to meet this growing electricity demand is to build a lot more natural gas fired power plants and maybe these modular or smaller nuclear power plants. And I don't know anything about that, but I mean, we're going to need a lot of natural gas power plants to, even down in Texas, we're going to need them. You know, our population is growing. We got all these people from California moving here and businesses moving here. So that's going to increase our electricity demand. But, you know, I mean, just think about it. All we're really doing with EVs and everything, they just want to electrify everything. You know, they even want to ban gasoline fired lawnmowers and make us all use electric lawnmowers. So it's got to come from somewhere. It doesn't just come from out of the air. So you got to generate it.
It's a great point, Dan. There's going to have to be a lot more electricity generation. But just one more question on the oil side of things, or maybe even nat gas, is the global picture. I mean, we always talk about OPEC plus, the plus being Russia and some of those other rogue countries. You've got some other South American countries that have started ramping up production a little bit more, as well as some Middle Eastern countries. Is there any other country that could swamp the market with excess supply that would pressure the oil price?
Well, their IEA is saying the supply growth is going to come from the U.S., Canada, Brazil, and maybe Guyana or something, you know, Suriname or whatever. There's a few other little areas that have some upside of supply growth. But it looks like to me, demand's going to go up by 1.5-2 million barrels per day year after year after year, and probably through at least 2030, just because of population growth. I mean, the more people, more demand for electricity, you know, more EVs, more cell phones, is going to be more electricity, and you're just going to have to keep going. But that's more gas, and we don't burn much oil to generate electricity. But it's just, you know, transportation fuel is always a big deal, and it's going to keep going up.
Well, I'm sure we're going to continue to see countries, including the U.S., try to keep their production higher, especially in these higher price environments. The companies are making money, and well, they do then start to focus a little bit more on growth since they have really cleaned up their balance sheets. Dan, before we get into some of the companies that you want to highlight with us, I do want to give a little shout out to an upcoming luncheon that you're hosting in Houston this Tuesday, April 23rd. You're featuring In Play Oil. Tell us how some of our listeners can get involved in this luncheon if they're in the Houston area, please.
Okay. If you just go to our website, which is energyperspectives.com, just energyperspectives, one word, no space in there, .com, you can go on. And then all you do is click on the deal to register. Now, this one, we're in a smaller room, so our seating is limited to 40. And I think as of this morning, we had like 30 people registered. But, you know, we'd love to have you come. And the CEO of the company is going to be doing an in-play as one of my top picks in our high-yield income portfolio. It pays monthly dividends. And, man, it's got a lot of really good running room. And one thing I didn't mention, you know, that Trans Mountain pipeline that's just recently been completed up there has significantly increased the oil prices that are getting paid to the upstream companies, because that pipeline ramping up is debottlenecking all of Western Canada. So the oil price in Canada are going up with WTI price increase, but they're also getting another $5 or $6 a barrel up increase because of the Trans Mountain pipeline.
All right, Dan, appreciate you breaking that down. And you did provide us with two companies that are small cap growth companies in the oil patch. And the first one that we want to look at together is Riley Exploration Permian, ticker REPX. This is a pure play in the Permian Basin, which we were just talking about. So hopefully the Permian doesn't peak out too early here. But it's a nice growth company. There's a lot on the go with the company. Maybe break down some of the key catalysts you think will be in play in the year to come.
And really, a lot of these companies, they do have upside production growth. It's just that the Permian Basin is totally leased out. And a lot of the production growth in the last couple of years came from private companies, but they don't have any acreage left. They've kind of run out of acreage out there. So anyway, I've been following this company for a couple of years. They came to my attention when I heard they had the potential for a CO2 flood out there. And I worked for Hess for 18 years, and we at one time had the most successful CO2 flood in the world. And they have an area where they have the same formation, the San Andreas formation, that is perfect for CO2 floods. It's a sandstone, and you mix CO2 with water and it goes through there and can really do it. So that's looking better. That's looking good. The pilot program's going good. And on that, they expect to publish a feasibility study by the end of the year to expand it what it would cost to expend it to the whole field. But regardless of that, what I really like about them is they have closed, are now established a new core area over in New Mexico, southeastern New Mexico in Eddy County, which Eddy County is actually known for some of the best shale wells in the world. In the world are being drilled in Eddy County. These are wells that EOG and Matador and some of the other biggies are completing. They're coming on at 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 barrels a day wells. But Riley is focused on shallower zones. They've got an area where now they have built up like 24,000, 25,000 acres. They've closed one big acquisition, and now they're going to close a bolt on that's going to like double their acreage in this play. Going forward, about 40% of their oil production, of total production, is going to be coming from New Mexico, and about 60% from their legacy assets that are in Yoakum County. They're right on the border between Texas and New Mexico. So both of these areas are close together, and they have strong production growth, increased production by 33% year over year in 2022, and another 61% year over year in 2023. And it looks like they're going to be adding double digit production growth just from drilling programs for the next several years. Fourth quarter 23 production was 19,924 BOE per day, about 60% oil. This company is heavily weighted to oil, so the low gas price up there doesn't hurt. Now, if gas prices do improve, it could significantly increase their revenues, but I'm not modeling that to happen for at least the next 2 years. But anyway, it generates free cash flow. They already pay a dividend. It was a private company that was built, you know, on these drilling programs and stuff, and those guys were having nice quarterly distributions out of those partnerships. So when they went public, they had to keep paying a dividend. And they told me, I just talked to them on Tuesday, that their plan is to increase their dividend 5% per year. That's their goal. And they definitely have the running room to do that. But they're going to be generating like 3 or 4 times more free cash flow than their current dividend. So they could raise it a lot more, but they're going to use the excess. They told me their focus was going to be to pay down debt that they incurred to do these acquisitions. Now, the last acquisition they did, or the one that they're closing in May, I'm sorry, they're working on closing it real quick. And they did an equity raise, which kind of stunned the market. You know, recently small caps have not been able to raise equity or sell stock, and they were able to do that. They're going to buy that with that equity raise, which I love, and keeps the balance sheet in balance. And they're going to have a lot of free cash flow, so it looks good. Again, briefly on the CO2 flood that's underway, they've got like 2 horizontal injectors and 4 vertical injectors that's driving the, you know, water. It's water plus CO2. It's increasing in that area, the production, so that looks good. They're going to get together a bunch of data from these wells and then see what that's going to cost. But another thing they got that really looks exciting to me, and I talked about them on Tuesday, they've established a new company called RPC Power LLC, and they've hooked up with another power company that has modular power generating facilities. And what they really look like is a railroad train car. And you can get our boxcar thing, and you can hook these things together as much as you want. So you can put power generation right in the field. So the gas coming out of the ground, it has to be, you know, processed a little bit to get the liquids out of it. And then that gas just goes right into these, you know, modulars to generate electricity. And they are already generating 36% of the electricity they're using in Texas is being generated by this new facility. And that alone is going to, first of all, you know, they don't have to worry about pipeline capacity for their gas or anything. So they're selling their gas out of the ground to this new company and then getting their electricity for virtually free. So that's going to lower their operating expenses there. And there's a lot of interest in this technology because they do have regular power outages out in West Texas. They get a lot of their power from wind and solar way out there in the middle of nowhere, really. And they can't happen. And a lot of their wells have submersible electric pumps in them. And so if they lose power, they can have wells have to be shut in. And so that's very costly. So this is a very good thing for them. And I think it's going to spread. I think a lot of other companies are going to start doing this. So that's got that upside. But I really like it. I think it's my valuation is about double where it's trading now. It's at about 27 or 8 here on Wednesday. And my valuation on it is $50 a share.
Okay. I was going to ask you where you stood in terms of price, dividend forecast, even debt outlook, but you've kind of covered those there for us. Very cool initiative there of how they're developing their own power, generating their own power on site, a whole other aspect of the company. Let's move on to Surge Energy then, traded SGY on the TSX. This is a Calgary-based upstream company, again, also in your small-cap growth portfolio. They pay actually a higher dividend right now than Riley Exploration does at just over 6%. Take us through some of the high-level fundamentals on Surge, what you like about them.
Yeah, I started following this a couple of years ago, and they came down and hosted one of our luncheons, and I've had them on a couple of webinars, and I just really like this team, and they've really got something going out. They have an area called Sparky. It's in Saskatchewan, and they own a bunch of acreage there, and they've been completing these multilateral horizontal wells. So they drill down, they case the well vertically, and then from the bottom of that pipe, they drill several. They drilled 12 laterals. And so these laterals may go out another half mile or so in all different directions and at different depths. And so basically they're just opening up a lot more pore space in the zone. They actually, in I think it was the fourth quarter, they reported some of the best producing, best economic wells in all of Saskatchewan were their wells. So they look really good. They're up to 25,000 BOE per day. And they're, again, they're very heavily weighted to oil. The current share price, the yield is 6.1%, and I expect them to increase. They've told me when they reach these debt reduction targets, which with, you know, the current oil price, they're going to reach these debt reduction targets that they have by mid-year within a few months. And so I expect them to raise their dividend. I mean, they've publicly told the market in a bunch of presentations that they're going to raise the dividends later this year. Strong production growth, again, 20.5% year-over-year production growth in 22, and another 15% production growth in 2023. What happens in these small caps, these Canadian juniors, and the U.S. small caps as well, when they get to certain thresholds, and 20,000, 25,000 barrels per day is where the market starts thinking of you as a mid-cap, not a small cap, but a mid-cap, and so you get higher valuations. You know, the market just starts thinking that, you know, they'll pay 5x cash flow or 6x cash flow instead of where these guys are trading, which is like 2 or 3x cash flow at this point. I've never seen companies of this quality trade at such incredibly low multiples of cash flow before. So it looks really good, and they got a lot of running room. And again, the opening of the Trans Mountain Pipeline has also increased their netbacks on their wells. So they're going to have a nice revenue surge here in the second quarter.
Well, Dan, just to the point you just made about the small caps, once they finally graduate up to, let's say, a mid cap because of their production, don't they also go on the radars of larger companies as potential takeover targets at that point in time?
I've heard that there's a lot of talk in Canada of there being an increase in M&A this year. And what'll happen is, you know, these big companies, they have to go out there and keep getting more acreage. They have to add inventory. I mean, if they run out of drilling locations, they're screwed. So they got to keep doing it. And Surge has a lot of them. So they'd be on my radar screen. I used to do this for Hess. I looked for companies for takeover targets. And actually, when you can acquire leasehold, and especially leasehold held by production, that is very, very valuable. And that's what I like. Oh, and that's one thing I wanted to tell you. I didn't mention on Riley. Riley, this acreage that they've got over in Eddy County, all of the acreage in the play that they're wanting to develop is 100% held by production. And that is extremely important. And I think on most of the acreage, they do hold the deep rights. So they may not be interested in drilling 8,000-10,000 foot, you know, horizontal wells that are $7 or $8 million, but somebody is, and Eddy County is really, so they could farm out those, you know, they could sell off or make some kind of deals with their deep rights if they control a lot of good acreage up there. And again, if any of your listeners, you want to see some of the best wells in the world, just look at what EOG is reporting, what Matador is reporting, and they're reporting those big wells in Eddy County. So it's a good, good area.
All right, Dan, great chatting with you. Thank you, as always, for sharing your thoughts on the energy sector, the energy prices, as well as the stocks that have your attention and some of your research on those stocks. Again, if anyone wants more information on the Energy Prospectus group, I'll post a link to the website. You can also email Dan and his team at energyprospectus@gmail.com, where you can find out more about that upcoming Houston luncheon and any of the future luncheons as well. So Dan, thank you very much for joining us on this weekend show. Everyone, thanks for tuning in on our website and podcast to this first hour. Hope you all have a great rest of your weekend. Be sure to check out our website, podcast, and YouTube channel for all the daily editorials and company updates we recorded throughout the week. Everyone, have a great rest of your weekend.